Hello, and welcome to the second installment of the DVD Marquee on HTF Radio, sponsored by the Home Theater Forum in collaboration with iCraveDVD.com. My name is Shane McDonald, and I'll be your host this week. Unfortunately, due to the unexpected passing of his older brother, Jeffrey was unable to record this week's episode. Our condolences and prayers go out to you and your family, Jeffrey, and we look forward to your return on the show very soon. On our second installment of the DVD Marquee, we're going to talk about a few titles from January, a couple of early reviews of two forthcoming titles, and I'll also tell you about my visit to a Canadian press event that previewed two large first quarter titles coming from Disney. I know many a home video fans are awaiting. But for now, let's get into our first review, Lord of War, a political drama starring Nicolas Cage's Yuri Orlov, an illegal arms dealer selling guns and other assorted weaponry to whoever has the right amount of cash. Based on fact, War explores the exploits of Orlov's worldwide journey through war-torn countries to deliver his product, constantly pursued by Interpol agent Jack Valentine, played by Ethan Hawke. Cage is the epitome of brilliance in this picture, completely inhabiting the character every nuance and shade perfected, yet as casual as if he were sipping on a fine mochaccino. His narratives throughout the film help make the movie more enjoyable. Here's one of my favorites from the film.
The first and most important rule of gun running is never get shot with your own merchandise.
Jared Leto as his younger brother and Bridget Moynihan as his wife were also fantastic, bringing great emotion to the roles. Hawke's performance was the only weak link for me. I wasn't drawn to his character like I was the others, and unfortunately, my misgivings also extend to the film itself. Although highly ambitious and not without its moments, Lord of War is boring. Plain and simple, it bored me. Despite superb acting, I could have pulled out a weapon of my own or sensibly hit the stop button on my remote. Lord of War is available in two editions, a single disc edition and a two disc special edition, which is the one that I screened courtesy of Maple Pictures, which distributes the film in my home base of Canada. Those of you south of the border, it's available from Lionsgate Home Video. Formatted for your widescreen television, the video transferred well from its original source. Unfortunately, there are some flaws that I observed, most notably is the edge enhancement, which rears its ugly head frequently, in addition to some intermittent flex. One thing I did find interesting is that although the film was shown theatrically in a 2.35 to 1 aspect ratio, its home theater rendition is 1.78 to 1. Don't kill the podcaster. Discuss among yourselves on your favorite DVD bulletin board. Two brilliant audio tracks were included on Lord of War. With mostly dialogue, you'd wonder why Lionsgate Maple would include a Dolby Digital 5.1 EX and a DTS EX 6.1 track. They fortunately don't go to waste. There are many directional effects throughout the movie, and the film's heavy soundtrack takes full advantage of the speaker placements. Lionsgate Maple has also included some great extras, including a thoroughly enjoyable commentary by director Andrew Niccol. You might recall his name as the writer of The Truman Show a few years back. He provides a commentary on the many facets about the making of the film and the locale where it was filmed. It's a really good listen and one of the best such tracks I've heard in a long time. Another bonus feature I enjoyed is Making a Killing inside the international arms trade, which brings interesting perspectives from many organizations attempting to stop the arms trade. For those wishing to dig deeper, specifically in hardware matters, Weapons of the Trade is another fascinating supplement. Finally, rounding out this two-disc package, seven wisely cut deleted scenes, a typical making of, a photo gallery, and an assortment of trailers for other Maple Pictures films. I believe Lord of War is a title everyone should see, but only a select few will want to own it. I'm sure I'll get no arguments if I say that Bill Murray has evolved into one of the greatest actors of our generation. Just two short years ago, he landed an Oscar nod for his performance in Lost in Translation, and once again he creates another award-caliber role in Broken Flowers, recently released on DVD by Universal Studios, Home Video in the US, and Alliance Atlantis in Canada. Murray stars as Don Johnston, and that's Johnston with a T, by the way, a middle-aged man slash Romeo who finds out that he fathered a son some 20 years earlier. Only problem is, he received the word via a letter with no signature, no return address. His neighbor, best friend, and amateur sleuth Winston, played by Jeffrey Wright, who's read one too many detective novels, plots out a trip to find out who the mother of his potential son may be. Murray visits with four former flames, played respectably by Sharon Stone, Francis Conroy, Jessica Lange, and Tilda Swinton. The meetings and confrontations between Johnston and his former flames are humorous despite the awkwardness of each situation. Broken Flowers is directed by Jim Jarmusch, who Murray also worked with in Coffee and Cigarettes. Jarmusch's directional style is refreshing and bold, yet simple with no tricks in the way of fancy shots. Yet, he doesn't bow to the typical Hollywood thinking and resists wrapping everything up in a nice, neat little package. He and Murray click wonderfully in this picture, and it turns out to be nothing shy of brilliant. Obviously, I enjoyed the film. If only the DVD itself was just a little bit better. There sadly are only three measly bonus features included. Getting a look at some of the ad-lib dialogue from a bus scene where two girls just blab about teenage stuff compromises girls on a bus. More entertaining is a 6-minute montage that takes you through making of the entire movie with a lot of hilarious off-the-cuff Murrayisms many longtime fans will love. Wrapping up the disc is a detailed look at the farmhouse sequence showcasing different angles which Jarmusch shot in order to achieve exactly what he wanted. Broken Flowers video transfer is presented in anamorphic widescreen with a ratio of 1.78:1. The colors seem muted slightly with no real vibrant colors other than the color pink. And unless you were lucky enough to see the film in its spotty distribution, I'll leave it to you to find out why. In short, a beautiful transfer that even the pickiest viewers will be able to appreciate. Sonically, it's just as good. Mostly driven by dialogue, the 5.1 track rarely calls attention to itself until the scoring kicks in. Along with the occasional burst of natural sound, everything comes together wonderfully. Even for fans of his mediocre comedic work like Ghostbusters and Groundhog Day, I highly recommend Broken Flowers, which strikes a great balance between the humor of those films and a surprising flair for drama, which works so well in Translation and Rushmore. Bambi is a classic film that I, for one, never expected to see a sequel to, but those folks over at Disney sure surprised, well, everybody except for their stock advisors when they announced this direct-to-video sequel a few months ago. Instead of the tragic tale we were served, the follow-up has our lead Fawn attempting to win the affection of his father who wants nothing to do with him. Now, we really can't call Bambi 2 a sequel as the story takes place during the course of the original film.
Your mother can't be with you anymore. Come.
Then, Bambi goes off to join the great prince, who happens to be his father, who's decided only temporarily to look out for him, that is, until spring arrives, and then find a doe to take over the parenting duties. I don't think this follow-up would have had a good theatrical run, mostly due to the fact that computer-generated films are tearing up the box office these days. Still, it manages to capture some of the innocence that made the original film so memorable. Unlike most Disney DTV sequels, Bambi 2 is well-drawn. It has a decent storyline, a great voice cast helps, including Star Trek The Next Gen's Patrick Stewart voicing the Great Prince, Keith Ferguson as Friend Al, and young Disney veteran Alexander Gould as Bambi, who also gave life to the title character in one of the studio's most recent smashes, Finding Nemo. Normally, with sequels or follow-ups created years after the original, is the artwork never seems to flesh out quite the same. Happily, this is not the case with Bambi 2. The background art is reminiscent of the original, and the characters look just as sharp with a couple of enhancements. Colors are muted slightly to help match closer to that goal, although they are brighter in comparison. It's a wonderful anamorphic widescreen transfer with a 1.78:1 ratio. It still floors me that Disney puts DTS tracks on some of their DTV releases, yet not on some of their bigger budgeted films. And that home video trend continues here. This type of film doesn't quite require the full spectrum of DTS or Dolby Digital, but it's more background noises that end up through the surrounds with the occasional directional voice or two. Bambi 2's bonus features are light, including Thumper's Hurry and Scurry, a hide-and-seek game for the kiddies, Backstage Disney, a familiar inclusion to die-hard Disney fans, where most of the making-ofs are located, or in this case, a soul making-of. Bambi's trivia tracks, a pop-up video-esque feature showing facts about the animals or the movie itself, and finally, one that I thought was kind of fun, is Disney's Sketchpad, which gives viewers their own turn at playing animator and drawing the memorable character of Thumper. And by the way, he and Flower are back in the sequel as well, just in case you were wondering. Though it may be hard for fans to even fathom the idea of a sequel to an animated classic over 6 decades old, I have a feeling most devotees of the original will enjoy Bambi 2 just as much as I did. I'm not sure about you listeners, but I for one haven't been able to get enough of Ryan Reynolds since Van Wilder. He has a way of delivering sarcastic lines that make them so much funnier than they have any right to be. In Waiting, he dishes out more wisecracks than cold entrees or bat wings. Surrounded by a perfect ensemble, Reynolds and crew work for Shenanigans, your typical bar and grill. The staff takes revenge on disgruntled customers.
Here you go, ma'am. I had the chefs take extra special care of it for you. And I'm truly sorry for the inconvenience. You know, we should probably feel guilty, but she broke the cardinal rule. Don't with people that handle your food.
Waiting is not solely about messing with people's food, but a behind-the-scenes look at the daily grind of food service. I, for one, have never worked in a burger joint, but from my research on the web, some say the movie accurately depicts their jobs. It could be because first-time writer-director Rob McKittrick wrote the script while waiting tables at... Alright, I'm not sure where, but that's what Maple Pictures did whenever he mentioned the chain's name and the extras. Currently, I cannot confirm if this is also the case for the Lionsgate release version in the US. I must admit, I fully enjoyed waiting. What Office Space did for the cubicle crowd, this film serves for the restaurant industry. Anna Faris of Scary Movie plays Serena, the female foil of Monty, played by Reynolds. They go toe-to-toe in the film with quips at each other that make for consistent, hilarious interaction. Justin Long also co-stars as Dean. He is wonderful as their misery-saddled co-worker. Just when you think something good's going to happen, another bomb is dropped on him. David Kochner is their manager, the type of boss you smile at whenever he's around. But as soon as he's out of the room, you wish someone would cut his heart out with a spoon. But veteran character actor Luis Guzman from Boogie Nights steals the show here in much the same way he did in Paul Thomas Anderson's 90s classic, especially in the witty repartee with his girlfriend played by Jordan Ladd, a sexy up-and-coming supporting actress who's brightened up so-so films like Cabin Fever and Club Dread. Unfortunately, the 1.78 to 1 anamorphic widescreen transfer falls a little short. While it mimics the lighting well for a bar and grill, it's grainy as hell and is plagued by dreaded edge enhancement. Orally, I'm not sure why they even bothered putting a 5.1 track on this DVD. It's awful all around. It's front-end heavy. I had to get out of my Berkline to put my ear up to my satellites just to hear if it was emanating anything from them. The dialogue was overpowering and drowning out some of the ambient noises. However, the dialogue is never compromised. Yet, comparing it to the Dolby 2.0 track, it's a major improvement. Three flavors are available for you to purchase on DVD. Unfortunately, two of those flavors taste like ass. They're full screen. If you're not a fan of the extras, you can pick up the single disc edition, which has the same exact bonus materials as the first disc of the two disc uncut and raw edition. On the first disc, you'll be treated to three outtakes, if you can even call them outtakes, six astutely deleted scenes, a collection of miniature documentaries under that little extra, which you'll see in full on the second disc, a couple of alternate takes and trailers. The second disc is where you'll find the best goodies. First up is The Works, all-access interactive video commentary. It covers all the facets of the film, including conception, scripting, and the music video that they show in the end credits. Occasionally during the commentary, you'll see a bun with an undersized hot dog in it. Pressing enter while it's on the screen will take you to a short mini feature. Something that I'd like to see more on DVDs is the expanded Telestrator commentary. You know, the thing Madden uses when you watch football. Here and there, director Rob McKittrick and one of a dozen producers on this film, Jay Ballas, will pause the film to point things out that you might have missed, like in-jokes and such, while keeping a running commentary of the film. Sending it back sees two former and one current server discuss what it's really like to be waiters and their worst experiences. One even goes as far to say what he did to get back at a nasty customer. It's pretty sweet. Waiting is the kind of film that I feel is ripe to attain a cult audience along the lines of box office underperformers like Austin Powers and Office Space. Either you'll love it or hate it, but remember,
don't with people that handle your food.
Tim Burton and Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp and Tim Burton. These two have teamed up more time than J-Lo's been divorced, Paris Hilton's been engaged, and Tim Allen's made bad movies. Yet their partnership continues to thrive with their fifth pairing, the stop animation film Corpse Bride, the highly anticipated follow-up to Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. Given the advancement of technology in the decade or so since the film premiered, this collaboration is more fluid in terms of animation. Corpse follows Victor, voiced by Depp, who is betrothed to Victoria, voiced by Breaking the Waves' Emily Watson, whom he'd never met until the night before his wedding. It's love at first sight, and during the rehearsal, Victor's nervousness forces him to flee, all because he can't remember his vows.
Do carry on. Let's try it again, shall we, Master Van Dort?
Yes. Yes, sir. Certainly.
Right.
Oh! Right! With this...
hand.
With this hand, I will...
Oh. Three steps! Three! Can you not count? Do you not wish to be married, Master Van Dort?
No.
You do not?
No. I meant no, I do not wish to be married. That is, I want very much to... Ow!
Pay attention!
He then runs into the forest, then into a graveyard. He finally gets his lines right and places the wedding ring on what appears to be a branch, but unknowingly marries Emily, the corpse bride. She's voiced by Miss Tim Burton herself, Helena Bonham Carter. One of the things that I really enjoyed about this film was Burton's tip of the hat to one of his biggest influences, legendary stop-motion genius Ray Harryhausen. If you pay close attention, you should be able to pick it up. Here, I'll give you a hint. It involves a piano. Burton's trademark use of color schemes continues to be a hallmark on all of his projects, especially the contrast between the otherwise prime and proper living world and the drab monochromatic, while the seemingly fun underworld is much more cheerful and more colorful, along with the typical blue hue we've come to expect to see in many of Burton's films. The 1.85 to 1 anamorphic widescreen transfer is beautiful. From the backgrounds to the characters themselves, everything is eye candy and zero to complain about. Compression-wise, there's nary an artifact to be found. Longtime Burton collaborator Danny Elfman provides a wonderful score that is treated well on the Dolby 5.1 audio track. While The Corpse Bride doesn't exude an aggressive sound field, it does create a passable ambience for the film, with crystal clear dialogue. Despite these pluses, I really can't give the 5.1 mix perfect marks, as my sub was fairly dormant and the rears only seem to come alive when Elfman's scoring comes into play. Speaking of the esteemed composer, one of Corpse Bride's bonuses I'm sure fans will welcome is a music-only track presented in superb Dolby Digital 5.1, which also features the songs sans vocals. Additionally, there's a good collection of featurettes providing much in the way of background and information on Corpse's creation, including the short making of Inside the Two Worlds. Tim Burton's Dark vs. Light provides a platform for the director to discuss his inspirations for the film and how they helped his creative team and voice cast, the latter of whom get two additional spotlights in Voice of the Underworld and Voices Behind the Voice, which collectively gives us a rare look inside how the actors prep for their tracking sessions, and the added value of several split-screen comparisons featuring the cast alongside selected scenes from the finished film. Pre-production galleries and a superb behind-the-scenes look at Bride's animation team, showing just how much effort goes into creating stop animation film, wrap up this superb single disc package from Warner Home Video. Okay, now in the words of Monty Python, now for something completely different. On February 1st, I made a 9-hour round trip to get a sneak peek at two of Disney's upcoming first quarter titles with iCraveDVD.com reviewer Jonathan. Before I get into that, we'd still like to get your thoughts on the release window from theater to DVD. We bring this up again due to the fact that the Johnny Cash biopic Walk the Line is being released on February 28th. Email us at dm@icravedvd.com. That's dm@eyecravedvd.com with your thoughts. Also, if you're interested in advertising on the DVD marquee, feel free to contact us at dm@icravedvd.com for more information. The only DVD to come out of the now-defunct Disney Animation Division is Chicken Little, which hatches onto DVD March 23rd. The good folks over at Buena Vista Home Entertainment screened some of the extras for us, including a look at the karaoke sing-along video to the Bare Naked Ladies tune, One Little Slip. We also got to see a few clips from the voice recordings and making of. Also of particular interest to collectors, we got to see an alternate opening scene where the main character of Chicken Little was actually a girl. The animation was a combination of pre-rendered CGI in the model phase without any color and without such texture. Sound effects and the original recording dialogue was also shown. Then we jumped headlong into the surprise hit of last year, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Now, although my fellow attendees and I weren't treated to the final film transfer since it wasn't yet completed, we did get to see snippets from the bonus features on the 2-disc edition. The main menu for the Narnia DVD is nice looking and functional and gives you what you need right off the bat. With a sweeping helicopter shot of snow-covered mountains and ice caps, the movie options surface below this footage. Now, the video used on these menus were filmed at the same time they filmed the making of the movie, courtesy of the DVD crew. The bonus features disc has two ways to navigate through the bonus material. creating Narnia, which is behind the scenes and making ofs, and Creatures, Lands, and Legends, which is the mythology behind Narnia. Among the numerous cool features that we were privy to previewing was the anatomy of a scene, the Melting River. We were shown only about 4 minutes of the roughly 22-minute featurette, but it was pretty intense with the main cast of children holding onto a chunk of ice and a green chroma key water tank as they braced to be nailed by gallons of falling water for the melting waterfall scene. On the making of side of the bonus materials, the menu looks at 11 creature characters in their typical behind-the-scenes making of way. But if you go down to the little wardrobe cabinet at the bottom of the screen and select it, you will be presented with a gothic take on the same menu, but on a new angle. Now, when you select the same character, you will learn about their mythology itself, rather than how they were made for the movie. Very clever and fits well with the movie, Through the Wardrobe. The Explore Narnia feature is a three-dimensional journey through the world of Narnia. When you select an area, you get all kinds of information for your selection in the form of a 3D map of Narnia. Think of the map of Middle-earth from Lord of the Rings as an example, but when you select an area, you get info related to it. As mentioned on the net for a while, we also found out the 2-disc edition will have a booklet and some artwork included with it, and that the version will be widescreen only. You can pick up the single disc edition, however, with full screen if you wish. Although the Narnia presentation exposed us only to 45 minutes of material, it's only part of the hour's worth of available supplement material that it will form. It looks like quite a set, and mark your calendars, it hits stores on Tuesday, April 4th. And with that, it's time to dim the lights on another edition of the DVD Marquee on HTF Radio, sponsored by the Home Theater Forum in collaboration with iCraveDVD.com. Join us in weeks to come for more in-depth analysis on the latest and most anticipated home video offerings, including new editions of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Midnight Cowboy, the first season of ABC's hot Sunday night drama, Grey's Anatomy, and our very first Oscar special, in which my returning co-host Jeffrey and I we'll give you our thoughts on the nominated films currently out on DVD, along with our picks for Hollywood's 78th annual Golden Shindig. So until next time, for Jeffrey Rosato and the rest of the DVD Marquee crew, I'm Shane McDonald. Thanks for listening.